Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Brittany Bussey is the co-founder, president, and chief medical officer of Vitel Health. She helps to improve the delivery of healthcare and organize digital health tools that augment the patient-physician connection while improving outcomes so that everyone can thrive. Dr. Bussey has over 6 years of experience in executive physician leadership, developing processes and technology specific for telemedicine. Prior to Vitel Health, she served as the Associate Medical Director for WorkCare, Inc. and Medical Director of Telehealth for Cura MD. Dr. Bussey received her medical degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is a vocal advocate for the well-being of both physicians and patients and has been a featured expert and contributor for a variety of local, regional, and national media publications. Hello, Dr. Bussey, and welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me, Iqbal. I'm really excited to be here today.
I'm excited to have you too. There's been a lot of changes and a lot of new things that are happening in the world of healthcare and digital health, and really healthcare providers are taking the brunt of it on all sides. So I'm sure my audience members and my listeners today are going to be very excited to hear about your insights and your experience. Many of my listeners may be meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Of course. So my name is Dr. Brittany Bussey. I graduated from medical school in 2009 from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. From there, I transitioned into a surgical residency. I didn't find that that was a good fit for me health-wise or lifestyle-wise, and eventually I did transition out. I spent some time in urgent care and then ended up as a healthcare telehealth pioneer in 2016, back when taxi drivers and Uber drivers would ask me, like, what the heck is telehealth? When I would tell them that it's when you have basically a FaceTime with your doctor, they were like, who would do that? Why would you FaceTime your doctor? So a lot of my time was spent convincing people that telehealth and Zoom calls were a way to foster human connection. And I think we've seen a lot more of that post-pandemic. So it was great to be on that cutting edge of the crazy, crazy obvious cycle, which was coined by a teledoc executive back in the day, and really continue moving forward with technology and incorporating that into the daily lives of physicians to help them eliminate a lot of the shallow administrative work that they do and foster true human connection within medicine. And when I'm not here working, I do have a 17-month-old son whom I adore, and we live in Northern California, so we spend a lot of time outdoors and really just enjoying nature as much as possible.
Brittany, you have a full life, but you know the steps that you've taken along the way are really exciting. And for the listeners today that are probably hearing about Vitel Health for the first time, it's a company that was founded just right around the pandemic, and it's based out of the Bay Area in California. So it is a digital health company that really puts physicians first, and that helps them make sure that they empower and elevate the patient. Some of the things that I found very, very incredibly insightful and very helpful is that your platform is actually there for physicians to create several things. Like they can create a virtual independent practice, they can find a new job, but also they can build a network of other clinical professionals, which really is the mainstay of how individuals can continually elevate their practice. So the things that I found very interesting, which I encourage my listeners to go and check out their website, you know, so you have a membership plan for your clinicians, right? And they have access to people, events, information, and opportunities where physicians today can actually grow their business. They can automate hiring processes. I mean, gain access to like a lawyer and legal services as well as marketing. Like, it's almost like a one-stop shop for the, you know, the independent practitioner that really wants to survive in a very harsh financial and clinical environment. Brittany, I'm excited to kind of hear a little bit about like what caused this to come into fruition. How did Vitel Health come to be, and what was the impetus that drove you and your co-founder to bring this to light?
Yeah. So I would say, like you said, we were born in during the pandemic, but this is an idea that I've had with me for a long time. As a physician and a very highly functioning person, I found it difficult to be an employee. And you can talk to many of my employers, I am a difficult employee. I have boundaries. I want my autonomy respected. And I really just want to be able to live my life in continuum with work, right? Like we hear a lot about work-life balance, but what we know is that we do spend about, you know, 40 to 60% of our life as adults in work. And so it's not work versus life. Work and life are melding together on a continuum, and we need to be able to navigate that smoothly. Well, for physicians, especially, and other highly functioning professionals, that will involve autonomy. And so we know from the research and flow states, Mihail Csikszentmihalyi wrote the book Flow, and he really focused on autonomy and work. And that's something that's really missing from healthcare practices is that you're taking these highly functioning, highly educated individuals and you're treating them like factory workers. Yeah. You're asking them to crank through patient visits every day in really short increments, the more the better. And as I mentioned, I worked at an urgent care and that was the feeling that I got day in and day out. I was celebrated for seeing 100 patients in a 12-hour period. I was like, what kind of care did those people get? In that period of time, I barely had 5 minutes in a room with them. And that's how people do feel going through the healthcare system as well. So the physicians are tired, the physicians are stressed and strapped for time. And then the patients, again, feel that, and they're not having that partnership that they need to navigate their own health. And so what we looked at in starting Vitel Health was how do we help inspire and empower physicians to take the driver's seat in healthcare so that they themselves can be happy and thriving and they can have happy physicians who have healthy patients. And myself as a physician, knowing that I didn't know where to start. Right. So you come from your employed practice. And when I first wanted to leave the urgent care for more balance, I looked at telemedicine jobs. In 2016, there weren't a lot of telemedicine jobs. And they said, oh, we're happy to get you a job. You have to carry your own malpractice. You have to buy your own licenses. You have to have your own health insurance. And we may send you a couple patients a week. And I'm like, wait, so
all the
am
burden,
I supposed to?
No benefit.
Yeah. How am I supposed to support myself? Like, I can't even pay for my own malpractice insurance at that rate.
Wow.
So initially, the idea from working in telehealth was the telehealth companies have trouble finding and staffing physicians. Mm-hmm. The physicians have difficulty building a complete practice as a telehealth physician. How do we streamline that for them so that the companies can just simply hire the physicians and the physicians can maintain their own schedule, licensing, and credentialing? So we wanted to put all of that into one free membership for them where they could keep their credentials in a blockchain so that it's 100% secure and timestamped and build trust in the credentialing process because that typically takes a long time. If we can speed that up, then they can hire almost instantaneously. They can also meet the clients that they want to work with, hire other physicians, speak to other physicians, and again, have some support from legal in an FAQ. And that's all part of a free membership for physicians. Then what we found in talking to the physicians, and like I said, being one myself, I was like, I actually don't really want to do telehealth jobs. Like, what are they doing that I couldn't do myself? Why don't I just start my own direct-to-patient telehealth practice? What do I need to do that? Well, I would need electronic health records. I need billing services. I need a way to manage patient memberships. Again, I need legal support. I'm going to have to set up a legal entity. I've never done that before. I may need to hire some staff, either part-time or full-time. And the more I talked to physicians, the more I found out they wanted, you know, bookkeeping services, marketing services. The number one question physicians have when they want to go start their own business is, where am I going to find patients? Yeah. So we were trying to think of like, how many ways can we bring patients in, having websites for physicians, all of that built in, like you said, to our different level of memberships to support physicians where they are in the stages of independence, whether that's a side gig or a fully 100% autonomous digital health practice or something that's supplementing an in-person practice, something we like to call click and mortar instead of brick and mortar. So we're really like looking at all the angles and trying to create that sense of community. So like we have physicians who are independent, but not alone. Again, another thing that was keeping physicians afraid of starting an independent practice was they're so used to having all those resources there for them in a healthcare system. They're used to reaching out to their colleague who's at the desk next to them. They're getting a drive-by consult. They have physical therapy potentially next to them, specialists in connection. And the thought is, if I go independent, I'm going to lose those connections. So we created our physician network to really foster connection and community within physicians at the very basic level.
I'm really enamored by the way that you're presenting these services. I mean, it's almost like walking, and I hate to say this, but it's like walking into a big box store where you have a wide variety and assortment of selection that are, you know, really customized for each individual provider, depending upon their stage. And because I can tell you, you know, you're absolutely right. Like as a clinician, a former clinician myself, you know, the full focus was like, you know, as a pharmacist, where am I going to get patients to come get their prescriptions, right? But on the back end, as a entrepreneur, like there's just a black hole of information, of resources, and the fact that this can be presented to both, you know, employed physicians that are looking to do something a little bit different, or those looking to pivot completely and either launch their practice or start to, you know, supplement their practice with these types of things is really, you know, something valuable for my listeners today. Brittany, can you share with me some of the size of the membership that you have? You mentioned that there's a free membership. I do know that there's also a different, like a mid-size and a premium membership, but overall, like how many individuals have actually, you know, come through the Vital Health program? And is there a success story that you probably would say, you know, that we've had so many success stories, but the one that sticks out for me today is this one. And why is that so valuable for you?
Yeah. So I'd say like our membership is continuing to grow. We were founded in 2021. At that time, I was pregnant with my son and still working as an employee of a large healthcare organization. And so we're really hitting our growth stride right now, really just reaching out to physicians, trying to, again, tailor things to their needs. One of the things that I am most proud of in our program is our remote patient monitoring and chronic care management program. And so what I love about remote patient monitoring and chronic care management is it actually can be a passive income stream to help keep physician practices who are already up and running more efficiently and effectively and generating additional revenue. almost completely passively. So when we looked at starting a remote patient monitoring program, what I felt was missing in the market and is starting to grow more today was what they do call chronic care management, but beyond just writing down the chronic care plans, the treatment plans, and going over those with the patients and then kind of leaving it up to them to make improvements. I actually wanted us to hire healthcare coaches. So we have health coaches on staff. Those health coaches are partnered with the physician's office and the physician patients, and we're rapidly growing in this area. And what our patients love about it is that this person meets them where they are, right? The healthcare coach is someone they look at as a peer. Unlike a physician relationship where we know the physician loves them, we know that they care about them. In many cases, these are concierge physicians that they're paying them extra money every month to be available to them and ask their questions. But these people are mostly elderly and they're not asking the questions. Yes. And they're not giving the information because there's still that separation between the hierarchy of the doctor and the patient. And they don't want to bother the doctor with some silly things like, I forget to take my meds.
Yeah.
Right. So when the healthcare coach sees, hey, your blood pressure is trending up, what's happening? I think, oh, don't tell that doctor, but I forgot to take my meds.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, like, what can we do to help you remember? So she said, oh, okay. She texts them and says, hey, it's time to take your meds. Something super simple. And we have a HIPAA compliant texting platform for that. So to the patient, it looks like any other SMS, right? They don't have to log in. They don't have to check their messages. They just receive a friendly text from their healthcare provider saying, like, let's address this. And one of the things I'm most proud of is our healthcare coaches have been working with one individual on his diet and lifestyle and exercise, and have actually started helping the physician deprescribe medications to
Yes.
this guy. And his blood pressure is trending down. And he told his health coach, he's in his 70s, he said he feels better than he did in his 50s.
Wow.
And for me, that is a huge win. Like, I love lifestyle medicine. That's what our foundational program is based on. The health coaches are very active in nutrition and lifestyle guidelines with the patients. And when I hear that we're deprescribing medication, like, I just go through the roof. I'm like, yes, that's a win. So I think, and then on top of that, our physician loves it. He feels like the health coach is his right-hand person and he can go to her for anything. He doesn't feel like his relationship with the patients have been affected. If anything, it's strengthened. And he is wanting to bring more and more patients into the program because he sees the difference that the program is making. And every month he gets a big check from us that boosts his practice income level so that he doesn't have to take on more patients. Like, he can keep a smaller patient load and continue to make more and more revenue the more patients we have enrolled and thriving in the program.
You know, I'm just so happy to hear you sharing with me like the value that this is bringing to not just, you know, the physician themselves, but, you know, as part of the healthcare team, like where individuals are being able to step in, because you are right. You know, as I mentioned earlier, prior to the start of this conversation, you know, I'm a primary caretaker for three aging adults. They're 86, 83, and 82. And my God, what we discover when we go over every other day or every day is just a variety of issues that have been brought upon themselves, and they do not want to share that information, partly because of a trust issue, but partly because they feel like they want to maintain their independence. Having that intermediary and really being the liaison that allows the physician to be involved and being able to be aware of how to make clinical decisions with another healthcare team member is really remarkable. And from a financial perspective, I mean, we've seen so many changes that continue to impact physicians, nurse practitioners. I know CMS has recently just, unfortunately, disclosed that I think there's a 3% reduction in reimbursement going forward for many physicians. And expenses are not abating. They are not certainly, you know, getting less in the coming months or years. So this is also a great way to continuously add a new stream of revenue. You know, Brittany, earlier you talked about physician autonomy and how that's like a number one factor for that. Talk to me a little bit about how you believe that giving physicians more autonomy will actually help solve the current healthcare crisis. Because we all know right now, talent is at an all-time low in terms of, you know, in pools and supply. As a healthcare talent acquisition leader, I struggle with trying to encourage people just to get into the pipeline, let alone finding people today. And physician autonomy is something that, you know, it resonates with me. I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, autonomy is a really important aspect of any employer-employee relationship. I'm actually currently writing a book about it, and anyone can follow along on LinkedIn if they're interested in learning more and finding out when that book is available. But it's looking at how do employers meet the needs of their employees so that those employees don't feel like they have to leave and go get those needs met somewhere else. And agency autonomy falls in that ladder. So during the pandemic, why we see a lot of physicians leaving was a lot of what affected me as an urgent care provider. You have a limited amount of time with patients. You're not making a difference. And there was suddenly this huge rupture in trust in the healthcare system that potentially didn't exist before. And if it did, it was kind of simmering below the surface. But I noticed it more, I would say, when I came to the urgent care from being in a surgical training program. So as a surgical resident, I rarely ever had a patient question a decision that I was making for them. Whether that was like, we're going to cut your appendix out, or you're going to take these medications post-op, or you're going to go home and you're going to do this and you're not allowed to be active. It was just a lot of, yes, doctor, like, thank you, doctor.
Yeah.
When I went to the urgent care, there was a lot of, how old are you? Where did you get your medical license? That's not what Google said. I know my body better than you do. And because an urgent care is not based on trust, right? An urgent care is based on a drive-by patient consultation, like, ooh, the urgent care is open and I've had this stomach pain for 3 months. I should go ask a doctor what it is. And without trust and connection, there was not a lot that we could accomplish together in that physician-patient relationship, unless I was seeing those patients on a semi-regular basis, like they just didn't have a primary care doctor and they were coming to see me at the urgent care instead. So what we saw during the pandemic was there was that rupture of trust, and doctors who were used to having good relationships with patients and maybe making sort of a difference in the patient's life were suddenly facing a lot more abuse within the healthcare system, abuse from patients, abuse from people outside of the healthcare system, just in their daily lives, abuse on social media. And being a doctor is already hard enough. It is emotionally and physically draining to practice medicine, whether you're a doctor, a nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant, a nurse. And now to have that added threat to your safety, a lot of us just felt it wasn't worth it anymore. There has to be some other way to utilize our passion for helping people, whether that's in technology industry or, you know, consulting or healthcare coaching. I know a lot of physicians have gone into healthcare coaching. They just wanted to do something else. And I get that. Like, but as you said, we need these people. And our patients need these people. There is a huge primary care gap that is only going to get bigger.
Yes.
In the next 5 years, there may be a 30,000 provider gap. And those patients are waiting months to see a physician or a practitioner to help them care for these chronic medical issues. And our elderly population is growing, and younger people are being diagnosed with long-term chronic disease.
Yes.
And we need to fix this. And we need to empower those who want to fix it to do that, right? So rather than try to hire more doctors, hire more clinicians to replace the doctors who are leaving, or even to, you know, add on to their experience, we need to actually give them the ability to practice on their own terms. And the more they feel empowered, the more they feel seen, the more they feel heard, then the more likely they are to want to stay in the system and to provide significantly better care to patients. And how I see that happening is a combination of two factors. You know, we call this high tech and high touch.
Yes.
So there's the human connection, and that's done by the physician, by the practitioner. And then there's a high tech component. And what we can do with technology is we can extend the reach of the physician, right? Like, people aren't physician extenders, like NPs and PAs, they're other clinicians. What extends the ability of physicians to practice at the highest level of their license is to get rid of shallow administrative work and to offload that onto technology, especially, you know, AI technology, remote patient monitoring technology, and then allow them to practice better and in less time focused on that administrative work so that they're happier.
Yeah.
And I think that's truly what's going to change our healthcare system, is looking at these physicians as capable, autonomous human beings and letting them practice at that highest level.
So these are very aspirational, you know, ideals. And I agree with you 100%, right? Like, you know, my father's a physician. I have family members that are all in the healthcare space. And like, many of them are having these conversations today about leaving the profession for a variety of reasons. Some are safety, some are remuneration. Others are just because of the limitations in terms of the quality that they're able to invest with their patients and outcomes of that nature. You know, but, you know, as a healthcare professional and as a, in the talent acquisition space, knowing that there is this gap, right? Like, I feel like we're barreling towards this, like, this cliff, right? Where unless, like, we're either able to divert, you know, the course of this current trajectory or build a brand new road, like the scope of independent practice is dwindling very quickly. So I'm always curious, like, you know, when you think about the next 5 years, like today is 2023, right? So in 2028, hopefully all of the elements that you're referring to are implemented, and you see physicians, you know, being able to have their practices with all these resources, right? But, you know, on a larger scale, how do you see the world of an independent practice in 2028? Do you see it being sustainable? Are there new things that we haven't even talked about yet that you feel are on the cusp of being introduced, where physician practices will have to incorporate these? Could be people, could be processes, could be systems. Mm-hmm. But I'm always curious to know, like, how the future will look when we're facing this growing demand for healthcare services and a dwindling supply of providers.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, we would need to look at how do we extend those providers and how do we start capturing the primary care and preventative care that needs to be happening. I think where we went a little bit off course is we started looking at preventative care with a lot of actual interventions, right? So prescribing medication, doing colonoscopies, you know, those things were now thought of as preventative when they actually are billed as interventions.
Yes.
And so what you see in private practice, or primary care in general, is that it's more sustainable when it's practiced outside of these larger healthcare systems. Okay. So we went the wrong way with managed care, right? Like, managed care came and tried to gobble up all the primary care doctors and put them into the hospitals. And it was as if, you know, someone who's smarter than me told me about this, was that insurance companies for auto insurance, right? That works really well. Auto insurance pays for catastrophic care, like hospitals.
Right.
But they don't pay for you to go get gas.
Right.
Or to do regular maintenance.
Yes,
or oil
yes.
changes, right? Like, but yet hospitals and managed care tried to take primary care and put it in and group it in with your catastrophic care. And it made it really expensive. for both the hospitals providing the care and the people purchasing the health insurance that in many cases they can't even use because of the cost of the deductibles and out of pocket. So what I see as the future is taking a small highway of direct primary care where people actually pay a monthly fee for primary care and preventative services, get a great access to a very competent physician and all of the medications at discount and things that they need. And then they save their health insurance for catastrophic cases. Right now, that's in a very small percentage, probably less than 15% practice in this membership-based or direct care model. We want to expand that into a highway and put that alongside the highway of the hospitals, right? So now hospitals are doing what they do best. Right. Primary care doctors are doing what they do best. And patients are able to navigate the systems and the crossovers with the help of a primary care physician who's constantly by their side and supporting them when they do need to go to the hospital.
This is a beautiful model that you're describing, Brittany. I'm really impressed with that. And, you know, I also know, like, you know, when we think about new ideas and new initiatives, right, like it has to be not just repeated, but got, you know, to receive buy-in from a lot of people. So I'm hopeful that listeners of today's episode are going to be one of those champions and they'll start taking this idea and really like promoting that, because I think, you know, when I speak with other guests, you know, they have their perspectives as well. They all work from different organizations and different perspectives of healthcare, right? But I love this concept because there is an area of specialty that is being carved out, which is so non-traditional, right? Like people like my age, even my kids' age, who are now in their 30s, will probably, you know, struggle with this for a little bit. But as long as they see it in practice, and they see the value that gets from that, I think that, you know, adoption would be, you know, quickly ramped up with that. And I'm excited to see that happen. Brittany, we've talked quite a bit about Vitell Health. We've talked about the state of, you know, physician practices and the avenues and the resources that your company is bringing to them, which I think are all outstanding. I'd like to pivot a little bit away from the company and more talk about you and about your journey. You know, you've held quite a few positions in the course of your tenure. Obviously, today you are the co-founder, president, and chief medical officer at Vitell Health. And you, prior to this, you were an associate medical director at WorkCare. You've been a medical director of telehealth at Cura MD, a resident physician at UC Davis Medical Center. You've had quite a few experiences, quite a few, you know, incidents along the way that have like expanded your horizons and have brought you to where you are today. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you saw that led you to start this organization. And I do see when I look at your website, like you have a healthy executive team. You have a new chief clinical officer. You have a chief strategy officer, your co-founder. Tell me a little bit about what it was like trying to work with, like, you know, your co-founder, you know, how you two collaborated and came up with this idea in terms of execution, and then how the build out has been. Because, you know, when you run a practice, when you run a business, you know, most entrepreneurs that I speak with, like, have the notion, have the vision, and they're like, this is how it's going to look. But then, like, execution and like, mm-hmm. like step by step, day to day, it's a challenge for many. But you seem to be doing it very successfully, and I'd love to be able to understand, you know, some of the milestones along the way where it went from, you know, idea to implementation, and, you know, how you were able to find some of the intelligent people that are now part of the Vitell Health executive team. Mm-hmm.
So I would say, like, we've just been very, very fortunate, or I've been very fortunate, very blessed in my lifetime. Well, I've transitioned through some very difficult periods and working through some of these companies, especially, you know, CareMD was a startup company. It had a lot of pitfalls in working for a startup, but I met some amazing people in that experience. And my co-founder, Doug, was actually the chief operating officer. When I first came on, he was the person that I spent the most time talking to. As I talked about before, you know, in 2016, it was really hard to find a full-time gig when I wanted to work remotely as a physician, but I knew that's what I wanted. I wanted to manifest this completely remote position that paid for everything that I needed. And I found this opportunity to be the medical director for the startup company. It required quite a bit of negotiation, right? Like, I want you to pay me this much. I need to be able to support my lifestyle that I already have from working 40 hours plus a week in an urgent care. And how can we kind of meet in the middle? So I was always in these negotiations with Doug. We supported each other throughout the many, you know, ups and downs of startup life. We went to many conferences together, and I really got to know him as a person. And I love him deeply. He is the godfather. His wife is a godmother to my son.
Oh,
we're
wow.
very good friends. And so we knew that Kira was headed downhill. And Doug, I found out, had left the company. I had actually left prior to that in 2019 and gone to work for a different company. He left kind of towards the middle end of 2020. And I was sitting on these ideas that I had for a telehealth company, mainly because, like you said, there's creative, right? And at Care, he had actually made me take this test. It was called like a care test, I believe. And you were either, you know, judge on creative, advancement, refinement, and execution.
Okay.
And I was like 90% creative and like maybe a little bit advancing and like almost no execution. And I know that's an issue of mine. I, you know, neurodiverse, I have attention deficit disorder. And that's definitely something that I've struggled with throughout my career, but I love seeing opportunities to fix broken systems. And I'll write all the ideas I have down in a notebook. So Doug, I knew, was an excellent, you know, refiner and great at execution and also advancing. And he met all of my strengths as well as my weaknesses. And we complemented each other well. And we had this great personal relationship. So I said, you know, would you start a company with me? And I was very fortunate that he said yes. He was very excited at the time. He's lost two brothers to preventable healthcare conditions. He felt that if they had better primary care, including access to remote patient monitoring and chronic care management, and were taught how their healthcare diseases impact their lives, you know, from that more personalized perspective, that they actually would have lived much longer than they did. So he is on a goal and on a mission to improve healthcare to prevention from intervention. I'm here to empower physicians. And we said, well, who's going to change the healthcare system? The physicians. And so that really, our missions met right there in the middle. We knew about the technology. He is a medical technologist by background and training. He's worked in amazing companies, Apple, SAP. He knows how to get technology up and running. He knows about processes. And he was able to connect us with those people he's worked with in the past who have helped him be successful. And then along the way, people have just found us. And so Dr. Harvey Castro found me on LinkedIn, came up to me and said, please let me be a part of what you guys are doing. And I said, please let you be a part of it. You're all over the internet as like the leader in AI and healthcare. You wrote the book on AI and healthcare. Like, of course I want you on our team. And I met Natanya, our chief strategy officer, again, through mutual connections. We had booked a 30-minute discussion about Vitel, ended up having a 3-hour discussion and canceling
wow.
meetings left and right and just connecting on every level, like physical, emotional, spiritual, and just loved what each other were standing for and what we were doing. I knew right away that I wanted her as part of the team. So I've just been very, very blessed and fortunate that so many people can see what's obvious, that healthcare needs to change, and believe that Doug and I can do this. And I believe that we can do this. Like I said, from our background and our experience, what we've created up until this point in our lives, we've shown that we're resilient. We've shown that we're capable. And now it's just really getting out there and continuing to build on what we already have as our foundation.
I love this story, Brittany. And the fact that you were able to find a partner with such a complementary, you know, perspective on what you do is rare. You know, and I'm speaking from my own experience, right? Like I have a very good friend of mine who I still maintain a solid relationship with today. I felt that that was that business connection, brotherly connection, and we continue to have a friendship. But yeah, it's not as common as you'd like to believe. And the fact that you have that today, I mean, this person is your child's godfather. That's a huge testament to that. Yeah. But I always ask my guests, you know, you've mentioned Doug several times, and, you know, certainly he's been a huge influence in terms of how your career has come to where it is today. Are there other individuals that you would love to be able to say, hey, if I had this opportunity, which you literally do on this show, to thank for some of the ways that they were able to help you grow into the success that you are today, who would that person be and why?
Gosh, I don't know. I must have missed this question in our pre-ops, but I'm like, You know, I think that every experience that I've had has been that growth opportunity for me. And while many people probably wouldn't thank the people who they see have harmed them in the past, or at least have tried to harm them in the past, I would. Because if it weren't for those times when I was met with this huge amount of adversity, where other people told me, like, you're not meant for this, you know, whether that was a doctor when I was a medical student who told me, like, I wasn't cut out for surgery, that I was too nice, that I was naive. I thought the fact that I was a woman made me not a good candidate.
Hey, this was like, what, 10?
Yes, this was like 10 years ago. And literally, I was in a room where some doctors were talking about the fact that women make horrible surgeons. And then that year, they admitted 100% women to their postgraduate training program. So
wow.
A little bit of a jaw drop. But, you know, like those situations when people literally their jaws drop when I tell them some of the experiences that I've had in medicine and the, you know, amount of abuse and adversity that I faced as a woman, as somebody who, like I said, is a bit neurodiverse, who really needs boundaries and accommodations and will speak up for myself and have had that pushed back against so many times. Like, I just say thank you to those people because they're the reason I kept moving forward to build this company for other physicians like myself.
I appreciate that vulnerability and that honesty, Brittany. I don't know how many listeners today are going to resonate with that, right? And I mean that in a great way, because I think that I've never asked that question. I've never heard that myself personally. So it's shocking to me. I'm still like replaying your statement, like, wow, somebody would have the audacity to say something as ignorant as that to, and you were a resident at the time?
I was a medical student, actually.
You were medical student.
I was just sitting in the room doing my medical student duties. And these two male physicians were having a talk. And I think they were just talking to themselves, but they were talking very loudly and they saw I was in the room. So
unbelievable.
And I heard that. I said, you think women make bad surgeons? Yeah, you guys are too concerned with babies and families and all this stuff. And that's still out there, right? Like women, it's still called a leaky faucet for a reason in STEM and medicine in particular. There's a larger rate of unattended attrition of female physicians, especially from surgical residencies. And this was published in an article. I read it on Stat News. And not only women, but also minorities. So there is still a huge barrier. And this article was published this year, here in 2023. There is still an unacceptably high rate of attrition for females and people of color when it comes to residency programs. So we need to create this culture of belongingness. We cannot keep putting people on the outside. Why? Because our patient populations are diverse.
Right.
Yeah. You cannot speak to a diverse patient population without a diverse medical provider population. And you will not meet patients where they are unless they see a person who looks like them providing the care. Another article that was published showed that patients who are people of color, especially Black patients, have better outcomes when they have Black doctors. Well, where are the Black doctors? They're being forced out of the system. That's an issue. Right? Like we need to talk about this more. We need to do something about this because unless we're making medicine a safe place for everyone, this is going to continue to get worse.
Brittany, I would love it if you could share with me the link to that research or to that study that was published. I would love to be able to share that with the audience as well.
Yeah, I will do that.
Excellent. You know, when you think about the next maybe 18 or 24 months, right? Like 12, you know, 1 year or 2 years out, right? Like I always want my guests to be able to tell me a little bit about what they've put on their list of things that they want to see happen. And this can be professional, right? But, or it can be personal, whatever you would like. But I find it very valuable because I know that sometimes whenever I speak with either clients or other professionals, they feel like once they've hit this plateau, then they're done. And that's it. Like, you know, this was the highest I was ever going to get. And now I don't need to do anything. It's like an easy street. And in reality, you know, every entrepreneur, business executive, you know, anyone I've ever talked to that is successful is like, that's great. I've reveled in the celebration, but now I need to move forward. So what else is next? So Brittany, what is on your list that you want to see achievable in the next 1 or 2 years that maybe if you come back on the show in that time, you can say, Iqbal, when I was on your show, I said I was going to do this and this is what it looked like.
Yeah. I said, it's interesting for me because like, I don't think I would ever reach a plateau, right? I guess that's what defines us as entrepreneurs. Like you said, we're going to celebrate ourselves. You have to celebrate yourselves. You wouldn't be able to keep going if you don't celebrate your wins. But success is a moving target, right? Because for me personally, I feel successful in and of myself. But for what I need to see happen for other physicians so that they can start to value themselves, so that they can start to feel successful, we're going to need to reach a lot more people. Right. So we have less than 50 physicians in our membership right now. I want to see that number grow, you know, in the next 2 years, at least 500, hopefully 1,000 physicians in our membership, seeing patients, treating patients on their own terms and growing these independent practices. We want to work together, like I said, alongside large healthcare organizations, potentially insurance companies, to find out how do we encourage this model. We know if we can go to employers, we've done this in the past through occupational health, large self-insured employers are always looking to save money on these types of things. Mm-hmm. And that's a market that obviously like One Medical has looked at, but there again, employing physicians, not looking at this in the best case scenario for the healthcare providers, they're looking at the bottom lines for themselves. We want to be the One Medical of independence, right? All these independent physicians. So if you come to me in 2 years and you said, look at you've outgrown One Medical, you put Amazon Health into a garbage can, I'll say, yes, I did that.
I love it. I love that. Oh my gosh, Brittany, that's amazing. I want you to come back in 1 or 2 years. And when, you know, when you're like,
hey, no one thought that would happen to Babylon Health. And look at what happened to them.
Oh, that's true.
You know, when people are on that upward trajectory.
Yes.
And they're not respecting the people who are building it for them. Things don't go down the way that they hoped. But we can help. We're here to help. And that is really my goal.
So with 500 members in the next 2 years, it'll be a really good conversation for us to pick back up, right? To say like, hey, you know, you start, I mean, you grew this, you know, 100% or actually like 10X in that time. And I certainly hope that that does happen for you. You know, as a leader in your organization, right? Like you are, you know, managing other people, you're trying to help them and their career as well and helping them grow as a leader and as a mentor. I'm sure you have many, many, you know, healthcare professionals, other executives that come to you for advice. But you are also on your leadership journey as much as I am. And we're always looking to glean better insights and information from others. I'd love to be able to hear from you. Like, you know, when you think about a resource that you turn to or one that maybe inspired you to become the leader that you are today, what do you recommend to others in terms of their leadership journey that you found valuable for your own?
For me, it's been a lot of diving inwardly in order to find that leader inside of myself, right? I knew it was there. Other people could see it, but I didn't value myself. I didn't think I was worthy of a leadership position. I wanted to stay on my path, stay in my lane. I wanted other people to leave me alone. And I couldn't understand why they kept attacking me, right? And it was because they saw something that I didn't see. They saw this power and this strength and this worthiness that I was hiding inside of myself underneath all of these layers of like, accept me, I'll do what you say, a people pleasing, perfectionism, like all of that is just a cover up for your own lack of self-worth. And so I have looked back at what has happened to me, and I said, you know, people can only be your mirror. They can only teach you what you're willing to see. And how do I take that information? Because we're just information collecting machines. How do I take the information I'm collecting that's bouncing back to me and start to use that in a way that's productive and builds myself back up? So I found a lot of tools along my way, again, really by serendipity, people posting things, finding connections through other people saying something to me repeatedly. So I had to hear something sometimes three times before it really clicks.
Yes.
I was fortunate enough to attend something called the Hoffman process, which really helps you.
H-O-F-F-M-A-N.
H-O-F-F-M-A-N. Yep. And it's a week-long process where you really dive deep into your experiences and how you're utilizing those experiences from that inner child perspective. And so internal family systems, it has been helpful. That can be really helpful to people. Looking at why my inner child tries to get her needs met in the way that she does, and evaluating those things, and then coming back to her as an adult and saying, like, we're an adult now. Like, I can help you, and let's go about meeting our needs this way. And so having those resources is really important. Reaching out, having a therapist, again, something people don't talk about enough in medicine or leadership or entrepreneurship, or all the solo person achieving great success all on our own and digging it up from inside of us. I've had a lot of help with that excavation, right? From therapy to groups to people, and services that I've looked into myself. To be magnetic is another thing. Like I said, that's all about self work and finding that asset in myself and believing in myself, believing that I do deserve to manifest these great things, to be a leader in my community, has made all the difference.
That's awesome. And I appreciate that journey that you've just shared, right? Because I do find it fascinating that most of the healthcare professionals I talk to are quick to show their patients that this is a resource for them, but rarely utilize them themselves. Brittany, when you meet individuals, right, whether it's at an interview or at a conference or just, you know, over a business meeting, sometimes there's a quality or a few characteristics that instantly hit you where you think, this is somebody that we really need to bring into the organization. She or he is really demonstrating some skills and some strengths that we could frankly, you know, benefit from. You know, when you think about people that apply for jobs at Vital Health, you know, there's obviously, you know, an HR process that they go through, but as an interviewer, like, what are the qualities that you look for that obviously are not on a resume, but are being, you know, brought forth in the conversation that you have where you think, you know, we need this person. Like, how do individuals that are listening to this podcast today walk away thinking, you know, Brittany as a president, as a chief medical officer, if she's going to hire somebody, here's what really appeals to her when she thinks from a holistic perspective, how to make Vital Health better.
I joke around with some of my employees, or, you know, they don't realize this, but I told my health coaches, I said, well, I know I'm going to hire you before I even meet you. I know I read your resume and I get a sense of who you are as a person. I think our energy speaks, right? Whether that's in our written format, whether that's in a Zoom call, it's how we show up in the world. Resumes can either show me that somebody has like a deficiency in self-confidence, right? Where they're like building themselves up, to the point where they're not showing openness or flexibility or willingness to learn, or they put it in a way that's like, this is what I've done, this is what I've accomplished, but this is also like where I want to grow and this is what I want to keep learning. Mm-hmm. So growth and transformation is really important to me, right? This whole business that we're building is about transforming a healthcare system and taking a sick care system and making a healthcare system. Yeah. So I don't necessarily look for those people who want to do things the way that they've always been done. Like, I'm not a micromanager. I need people to take initiative, but I also need them to talk to me and to take feedback. And I need them to communicate with me about their own capabilities and their boundaries as well, because we're not superhuman, right? We can't have a healthcare coach take on 600 patients and give them good care, right? Yeah. If my business is about empowering physicians to take better care of patients, I can't overburden someone else with that care. So whenever they take on new patient loads, I check in frequently with them and I make sure that they feel like they can handle this. And we build that relationship of trust, authenticity, and vulnerability with each other. And we keep open lines of communication. So I need to know that they're a good communicator and that they're going to tell me personal things about themselves, because I'm going to tell them personal
Sure.
things about me. And we're going to build that relationship together. Like I said, the book that I'm writing is all about how do we be better employers? How do we build better culture? And better culture is based on hearing what people's needs are. I think we all grew up in this golden rule era, do unto others as you would have done unto you.
Yes.
But that doesn't always work, right? Like other people have different lives and different experience. I might want X done to me, but they want Y for them.
I love this.
And so if I just ask them and I say, hey, I see you, I hear you, tell me what you need. And whether that's, you know, support because they're going through a food insecurity crisis or a housing crisis or their internet's about to get shut off. You know, I've faced all of those things with employees at different levels in my career. Like I said, especially working at a startup. And them knowing they could come to me and we would find a way to help them no matter what level they were at, as far as meeting their needs, and just building that culture of holistic safety for individuals so that they can really start to achieve at that highest level. When you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you have to meet the base levels of the pyramid before your employees can transition up to self-actualization, to meeting their goals, to feeling accomplished, to really being committed to your company and your culture. If you're not meeting their needs down here at the basement, they're on their way out.
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I really try to interview my employees, is to get a feel for them as a person, because that's how I want them to relate to patients.
So Brittany, this sounds a lot like a very holistic framework in terms of preventing employee burnout. Are there other elements that you not only employ, but you share with others so that when they're thinking about their practice? Because I mean, employee retention is such a huge topic. And honestly, like HR teams are struggling left and right to come up with creative ways to engage that. And while the numbers are plateauing, they're not improving. I know, are there other secrets that you would think about for a clinical entrepreneur to say, you know, have you tried this, or, you know, where else can you, you know, add value to your employees today that you have found successful as you've been operating your business?
I think it's really, like I said, it's about listening. And also building that foundation of trust, because people aren't going to tell you things, just like we talked about with the physicians and the patients. Like,
employees are no different.
Yeah, don't trust their physician. Some of them don't. Some of them don't trust the reaction that they're going to get from the physician. I had an interesting conversation with a friend whose daughter, teenage daughter, lied to them. And my response was, why is she afraid to tell you the truth? And like, what reaction did she think was going to happen? And did you actually do the thing that she was afraid you were going to do when you found out that she didn't tell you the truth? And so like, how do we build that foundation in our culture? How do we build that from the ground up? You know, whether you're a new employer, so a new physician, you're just starting a practice, maybe you only are going to have one or two employees. It's okay. You can still build these foundations. We don't have that many employees, but I wanted that culture from the outset where people need to feel comfortable being seen, being heard. And now if you already have an existing culture, especially a culture of medicine, where people are trying to go it alone, they're trying to appear infallible, they are afraid of the retribution that can and will happen to them if they do exhibit any kind of weakness, Within that culture, they're not just going to come to you with these types of things. So how do you provide, excuse me, support to them? I work with a woman, Dr. Diana Londano. She has physician coach support. They work with a large amount of organizations. You can also just find them through the internet. And if you're a physician and you're struggling and you don't feel comfortable going to your organization because the trust isn't there, you can go to them. Right. And those coaches are specially trained to help physicians in a time of crisis. It's completely anonymous. It's completely free. So get that experience, find out what it's like to feel supported so that you can start to see yourself. I think a lot of what happens in the healthcare system is that we don't believe we deserve health. We don't deserve to be better. We don't deserve to feel better. That's at least how I felt. Like I said, unworthy. And our patients come to us and they say, like, well, I could just take this pill, but my physician doesn't have a lot of time. They're barely making eye contact with me. Am I really deserving of being healthy? And then they work with a healthcare coach. A healthcare coach starts celebrating their little wins, starts saying, like, you're a person and you're valuable to me. And now they start to value their health too. The same thing has to happen between the employers and the employees. We need to celebrate each other. We need to celebrate wins. We need to show appreciation. This cannot continue to be a culture of abuse, of a hierarchical culture where we're constantly pointing out other people's shortcomings and their mistakes and saying, that's how you learn, right? Like if that's where it starts and that's where it ends, it's not going to go well.
Wow. Brittany, this is a deep conversation. I'm so glad we're having it too. Like I don't have that many guests that come on the show that can provide such a meaningful perspective on how to really understand the needs of their employees and how to build that bridge. So this is really good. Brittany, we've talked about a lot of different things in a lot of different areas, and I'm very grateful that we have. If there was one thing that you would want to talk about that we haven't touched on already that you think would be of value to the listeners, what would that be?
I think we've talked about it a lot, but it's really just communication. I think if there's one thing that's missing in all of healthcare and in all of our relationships, it's open and honest communication with each other and that back and forth reciprocal communication, right? Like so often we want to talk down and then we don't listen. And you have to actually be a good communicator. You have to do both. You can't be listening all the time and you can't be talking all the time, right? We've had a great conversation because we're going back and forth and we're bouncing ideas off of each other. And that's how relationships grow. That's how we learn. That's how we become better. So if you want to have a better healthcare organization, we want to spend more time listening to the people on the front lines and hearing what they could be made better. And then when something is better because of an idea or some feedback you received, tell them that. Like appreciate them, appreciate the ways that they've brought change to your organization and the things that people are doing every day. So more appreciation, more communication, and more flexibility.
Awesome. Brittany, Dr. Bussey, thanks again for being on the Healthcare and Hire podcast. Your insights and experience are very invaluable. I love the way that you've been able to talk about Vitel Health and the great things that it's doing for physicians and other clinicians. I encourage all of my listeners to go visit your website, which is www.vitelhealth.com. And certainly I'll make sure that I include that in on your website, on the webpage that we'll be creating for you, as well as your social media handles. But again, thanks for being a guest on the show. I'm very excited to see how well you and Vitel Health do this year and next. And I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing how you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Thanks, Iqbal. It was really fun talking to you today.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.